Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode. Operating for over 50 years, Dental Tech Group is a multi-award winning second generation dental company leading the way in digital dental innovation. It now operates four state-of-the-art clinics across Ireland, offering comprehensive dental care, including teeth cleaning, composite bonding and implants, with a special focus on 3D printed digital dentures and smile enhancing treatments. Sitting in front of me is Bevan Mann, the CEO and owner of Dental Tech Group. Under her leadership, the business has undergone a complete transformation from traditional denture manufacture to full digital workflows using scanning, CAD design and 3D printing for everything from dentures and smile makeovers to anti-snoring devices and removable veneers. Dental Tech is also Ireland's leading provider of mobile dental care to nursing homes and home care sector, ensuring thousands of vulnerable patients receive their care they deserve. In its in-house manufacturing lab, not only supports its own clinics, but also supplies precision dental devices to hundreds of practices across Ireland and the UK. Bevan, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me and thanks for that lovely intro. Really appreciate it.
I'd love to tell you I wrote it myself, but I didn't. Now, where to start? Right. What is the history of Dental Tech and what part have you played in it?
Yeah, good question. So the history of Dental Tech, so my mum and dad set it up in the 1970s as kind of a small local lab and denture repair clinic. And I accidentally joined in 2001. When I say accidentally joined, I joined on a 3-month contract in 2001. So yeah, nearly 25 years ago. And I was joining, I was in between jobs and I had done my degree. I'd gone to the States and travelled around. And then I came back and I was looking for a job and I didn't want to do anything to do with my degree, but I had accounts kind of experience, bookkeeping experience from working in Dental Tech. So I kind of winged my way into a job when I came home and I was then changing jobs. My mum said, will you come in and put in a computerized accounts program for us? And I said, yeah. And I said, it'll take me 3 months. It took me six. And during that time, I was doing lots of other kind of little things and I realized there's just a lot of potential here. And my mum and dad were always talking about kind of winding down at that point. They were like, when we retire and when the business closes. And I just couldn't get my head around it. So I kind of stayed on. I think at the time it was maybe around September. And I said, do you want me to stay till after Christmas? It's always an easier time to look for a job in January. And my mum kind of teared up a little bit. So I kind of thought that that's a yes, for sure. And around 2004, they were talking about, you know, retiring, closing the business. Could not get my head around it. I was like, surely other businesses survive and stay open when the main person, you know, moves on or retires and things like that. And, you know, I always say, I'd like to say it was around, you know, a board table strategic meeting, but it wasn't. It was in the local pub on a Friday night when
Who's
I had the chat.
Yeah,
exactly. Like I had the chat with them and tried to persuade them, you know, to let me replace them. You know, I was only in my 20s at the time and I probably could have been a little bit more empathetic about it. But I was kind of going like, surely you are replaceable. You know, I couldn't get my head around this whole thing about being an expert in something and nobody being able to do it as good, you know, but it's something that I kind of challenged them on and they thought this was hilarious. You know, I mean, later on throughout the night, they were still laughing about it and that just irked me so much. I was like, I am going to prove this point. You know, I love nothing more than a challenge. So in fairness, yeah, they kind of said, go for it, gave me a chance. And I just slowly started replacing bits of the jobs that they did. You know, I kind of left the final expertise bit. I found, what do you really love about being here? What would you like to stay doing? And then started replacing all the bits that they didn't like so much, you know, or they were maybe procrastinating over a little bit. And yeah, found expertise in other areas. And we grew from a team of four when I joined to very quickly a team of 17. We outgrew the premises. We had to find another premises. We were lucky enough to find somewhere very local within walking distance. And, you know, my mom always reminds me that when she first moved into their first building, she got a coat hook with six hooks on it. And she said, I don't think we'll ever fill that. you know, and I still have it in my office today. So that's how it kind of started when I started kind of taking over doing the management side and started adding services. My dad went on to study even more and specialise even further. That gave us a
need. Did it help you that you didn't have the technical background?
Do you know, I kind of, along the way, I thought it was a hindrance because I thought, you know, I'm not involved. I'm not a dentist. So I was like, I'm not involved in any of the chats or any of the agencies or the associations for dentistry. So I felt I don't really know what's going on in dentistry. And then I'm not a technician. So I felt a little bit excluded. But what I realised, you know, over time is that sometimes when you don't know what's currently happening in the industry, it's actually good. So I was very lucky in 2013 to join a female entrepreneurs group called Going for Growth, run by Paula Fitzsimons. She's a powerhouse for women in business. And it was almost like somebody had switched the lights on. I was like, oh, this is what everybody else is doing in other industries. But sure, I could do that and I could do that and I could do this. And I simultaneously grew both parts of the businesses. I grew the dental clinic, dental and denture clinic, and I grew the manufacturing. I didn't know that you typically would do one or the other.
Yeah.
You know, the dentist wouldn't necessarily have a laboratory and the laboratory wouldn't necessarily have a clinician. And so I simultaneously grew both because that's what I came into. And I thought this makes sense to feed one to the other. And then I started looking at what other people were doing in other industries because I didn't really know what was going on in our industry unless I read about it and things. So I start looking at what services we could add and added the nursing home service came. We kind of fell into it a little bit. Somebody rang up asking, would we see some people from a nursing home?
Mm-hmm.
That was in 2011. And
were you surprised that service didn't exist already?
I was. I was shocked. I knew my dad had gone into nursing homes on occasion when he'd get a phone call to say like a new nurse had come in and the new nurse was asked to clean all the dentures and they would collect all of the dentures, clean them in a bowl and not know who they belonged to then. So I thought, oh, dentures should have the name in it, you know, so I'm kind of adding those bits up. But yeah, we got a call one day, would we look after a couple of people from a nursing home? And I always wish that social media was around at the time, you know, the way it is now, but it wasn't, unfortunately. But like a little minibus pulled up outside and out rocked about 10 or 12 nurses in full habits. They were in nuns in their full habits, a local nursing home that looked after nuns. And, you know, one of the nuns was looking after all the rest of them. She was the younger out of the lot. And they ended up needing a lot of treatment. They were coming back every single week for treatment. And just through conversations with them, realised that only the people who could leave the nursing home were able to come and see us, of course. But that was only about 20-25%. So there was a huge cohort of people who weren't able to access the dentist. And also their health was deteriorated enough that they weren't mobile enough. So therefore, if you add two and two together, their oral health was needing a lot of help and a lot of support. And, you know, I say to people, we fuel the body and we heal the body predominantly through the mouth. Yet in aged care, it is one of the most overlooked parts of the body. So I just found that there was an element that we should really support that. And it was definitely a passion project. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nobody else doing it. It's not the sexy side of dentistry. You know, it's nice to sit in the clinic and have people come to you. But also there's a huge need there. And I grew that at the same time as growing the clinic side of it and the lab side of it. But look, we were only one surgery for a long, long time. It wasn't until, you know, two big things, I suppose, happened along our journey. One was my mum and dad were getting to a point where they, you know, needed to exit and wanted to exit, but they didn't know how we would do it. So we kind of had those chats around, well, I definitely want to keep continuing. Yeah. So I want to grow the business even further.
And were they all right with that growth profile?
I always ask this
intergenerational thing. There's always that, well, we didn't do it that way in my day and I wouldn't do that if I were you. And
there was definitely a couple of those. So, I mean, like if you even go back to the first day where I said, I'll grow the business and I'll help replace you, like, and they laughed. I think after that, when I did deliver on that, you know, kind of replacing them in areas, they didn't laugh as much after that and kind of took me a bit more seriously with things. But like I would always, you know, any kind of change like that is not easy. Mm. You know, it's not easy. And I think it's about having the right conversations at the right times. We weren't talking about it all the time. I'd say realistically over maybe a 4 or 5 year period, we were chatting about it. What does this look like in the future for you guys? Do you want to be working in perpetuity? Do you want to, you know, always have something, or do you want to exit at some point? And I wanted something different to my mum and my mum wanted something different to my dad. So in that case, it was like, oh, how do we make it a win-win-win? Mm. You know, And how do we make it in such a way that, you know, because we're family, I mean, I still want to see my parents after, you know, whereas with a lot of acquisitions or mergers, you know, the person might exit and never have to talk to that investor again.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, we're family, we see each other for all the different events and stuff. So finding what it is that each of us wanted was really important. And how do we actually do that? And how do we do it in the most cost effective or tax effective way for us? And we worked on that. We got help. We got the right advice. We always looked at ourselves, even though we're kind of family business, we always aspired to be a big corporate, or at least, you know, do everything like a big corporate would do. Yeah. Everything above board, make sure everything's really clear. So we hired experts. You know, we got external evaluation. My parents had their own financial advisor. We had for the company the right legal team, all of that sort of stuff that you would expect. And then came up an agreement. But the timing was mental because it was November 2019, we signed head to terms.
Okay. It was a long gestation period from 11 through to 19.
Stop. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it was probably proper. The chats probably started happening around 2014, 2015, like serious chats. But, you know, we'd agreed the first payout to happen, you know, the end of quarter one, 2020.
Yeah.
I mean,
minor issue happened around the same time.
Nobody expected any of that. You know, I was like, yeah, no, good, bad or indifferent. That was the agreement. And then, of course, you know, I'm setting up plans for the next growth phase of the business. And I knew, you know, we were never going to grow the business if we didn't look at how we grow our capacity within the business. You know, we rely so much on expert skills in the surgery, and the same in the laboratory. You have to have really highly skilled technicians, really highly skilled dentists to deliver what we deliver. Is there an industry
capacity issue in terms of, as you look for those key roles?
Yeah, definitely. That has been a pressure point for us over the years. But I think we have found a rhythm for hiring new people. Okay. And we attract a lot of talent now, mainly because of our digitization.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's making dentures seem more sexy, you know, and there's such a need out there, you know. So when we kind of looked at how do we grow capacity, I kept coming back to digital dentures. We were making dentures, we were supplying, fitting them. It takes huge amount of chairside time, lots of appointments, and a huge amount of manufacturing, and lots of people involved in each stage, and also a lot of waste as well. So I kind of had that sustainability piece at the back of my head. And in February 2020, I got a lovely group of really good friends and mentors together in a room for kind of 2 days, locked them away. And I was like, I need to, you know, build a plan, a strategic plan for the business to grow. And I need your help. And we sat together and we put a plan together. And two huge milestones came out of that, but also two huge barriers came out of it. So we decided digital dentures, and we were going to digitize and grow from that. However, the two big barriers were time and money. Our team were already max capacity, and it was going to cost a lot of money. And what are we going to do? So kind of put it on the back burner for the month of February. It didn't really last on the back burner for very long, because as soon as COVID happened and we got over, I suppose, the initial wobble of what is going to happen, my team had a lot of time on their hands because we were really reduced. We were doing emergencies only. You know, we stayed open for certain bits. We were doing like free dental for frontline staff, you know, to get them back working, especially if they were emergency or any pain. We did a contactless collection and delivery for broken dentures all around Ireland. So we had people posting us dentures from around the country, and all sorts. But we also started working with the team on CAD, moving to, you know, working with your hands to now working in a digital
space.
And, you know, some people really picked it up so quickly. And they were like, yeah, I can see this as the future of my job. And other people were kind of pulling back a bit. We, you know, we did a lot of pushback too with the team. But because they had so much time in their hands, they really overall embraced it.
It gave them the scope to do it, to take it out.
Yeah, so, and COVID happened, you know, It ended up being extended for a lot longer than anyone thought, which gave us the time that we needed, you know. And we also were an Enterprise Ireland client. So we were quite lucky that we got a lot of support from them. You know, there was funding available that, you know, somebody, great bit of advice somebody said to me is, you'll never get cheap money like this again. You know, so whatever was available, we went for it. We did. We made the most of it. And we were able to fund this transformation and train the team and bring in equipment that we had never worked with before. You know, I think one of the most difficult times was when one or more of my team kept saying, you know, you can't do this stage. You couldn't possibly do this digital. It has to be done, you know, the traditional way. And I was like, definitely, I mean, if people have landed on the moon and they're in space and they're doing all of these, you know, we have to be able to do this digitally. And I really, I was, you know, my head was melted. I think that's probably the best way. I was like, but I was determined and I was so dogged about it. So I did what any serious entrepreneur would do, is I picked up the phone and I rang my dad. I said, Dad, I need your help. I need to scan somebody's mouth who has no natural teeth. It hasn't been done before. I need to do it with a digital scanner. And I need you to be able to do it so well that it picks up all the stuff that you'd normally pick up if you were doing an impression. You know, the moles, the mouth, but all that gunky stuff that nobody likes. And my dad said, well, I don't know how to use a scanner. You know, and I was like, I know. I said, but I know somebody who knows how to use a scanner.
They just don't know where to point the
scanner. Exactly. And if I got a patient who was willing to be like a guinea pig or be our education patient, would you, you know, he was like, yeah, okay, let me know when, you know. So we organized all of this in a day. We got a patient in, we videoed, you know, probably about 4 hours worth of video footage. But at the end, my dad scanned the patient in 3 minutes, showing that you could pick up all the details that you needed to pick up. And we had gotten rid of that bottleneck in the space of, you know, half a day. So, but we ended up with a 3 minute video that I was able to show everybody, going, look, this is what can be done. You can do it. And all of a sudden, everybody was, I think it was like, you know, the 1 minute mile, like, you know what I mean? It was like, or the 4 minute mile. It's like all of a sudden somebody can do it. Oh, if somebody can do it, I can do it. Oh yeah, surely if he can do it, I can do it. And then everybody bought into the process. So anytime we hit a bottleneck where somebody was like, oh, you can't do that digitally, it has to be done traditionally, we kind of said, okay, well, how could we change it over? Could we change a little bit? So, and if we can change a little bit, can we change another little bit? And it was just piecemeal.
Yeah.
And we did that over a 2 to 3 year period with every single stage that was traditionally done by either in the clinic or in manufacturing. And we helped people through the process, you know, and I...
And is it fully digitalized now at this stage?
Yeah. So for our clinics, we can make a denture. If somebody has no natural teeth and they've no existing dentures, so nothing to guide us or anything like that, we can do full digital denture from straight to finish, and we can do it in 3 visits. Whereas typically it would have been 5 or 6 visits. It would have taken several weeks to do it, and at least 9 clinical hours and 16 manufacturing hours. And we can do it in 3 visits.
And what about the manufacturing time? What's that down from?
Well, it's 3D printer. So we just click print.
Click.
Yeah.
It's literally
design. We can design it in 40 minutes and click print. We can have it printed in 2.5 hours.
That's incredible.
And we can put somebody's name into it. So if, when we're doing dentures for nursing homes, we always
put the
patient's,
etch it in.
We put the patient's name in. So, you know, you'd find a denture down the back of a couch, you know, in a communal room. And, you know, I've had calls from nursing homes saying, oh, we found that denture. Mm-hmm. You know, but look, we look after people in nursing homes, and that's a huge part of the business. But actually in our clinics, the huge change that we've seen is that, you know, 15, 20 years ago, predominantly our client base would have been maybe, you know, mid-60s, female, you know, no natural teeth left, so fully edentulous, as we call it, so full denture, full top, full bottom. And now, you know, in 2025, 2026, 2027, we are seeing people who are in their mid-40s to 50s, early 50s, a lot of female, but a lot of male, with a couple of teeth missing, who need a partial denture, or they need a bit of work done to their natural teeth. And we're doing huge smile makeovers in that respect. You know, the stats are very, very surprising, I suppose, to a lot of people. But, you know, 18% of the adult population in Ireland over the age of 54 have no natural teeth.
No natural teeth.
And most are wearing dentures. 1 in 3 Irish adults over the age of 35 are missing one or more teeth. So if you think, you know, people say to me, surely dentures are, you know, are going out of fashion. Actually, our population is growing. You know, we're living longer. We have much more complex needs. You know, our healthcare is really robust, looking after people, but oral health, you know, is still impacted. You know, things like dry mouth or, you know, diabetes, like they all affect, you know, your mouth and your mouth health and your oral health. And, you know, there's periodontal disease and people are losing teeth, and, you know, we're there to help and support. But yeah, we're seeing still a huge number, but actually over a much wider age gap. And I definitely think the digital has a lot to do with that, because I think over the last 5 years, we've promoted our digital change, our digital workflow, how much easier it is to access services. And at the same time, we do a lot around removing stigma and shame around missing teeth. There's a huge, I mean, we talk about mental health, we talk about menopause, we talk about all of those areas of the body that we wouldn't have talked about before. And yet still, there's a huge amount of stigma around dentures. And there's no shame in having some teeth gone. There's no shame in having lost a tooth or all of your teeth. You know, it's about helping people rebuild their confidence, helping people to smile again, removing people. I mean, there's so many people who don't smile when they're in photos because they're embarrassed of their smile. You know, or they're missing a tooth and they're trying to hide that side of their face, and they'll only pose one side.
Way.
Yeah. You know,
it's like a mugshot.
So
you can look at me this way.
And we do so much on social media to help remove that stigma and really to help support people, because your mouth is also really connected to your mental health. Mm-hmm. So if you're not smiling, you know, it can be really, really hard. Yeah. People are really affected by it. So
And when you look at it from an industry perspective, how much of the industry would you say is as far down the path as you guys are?
That's such a good question. I suppose we were so caught up in our own little bubble, I suppose, like everybody was bubbles during COVID, that even with our you know, transformation, I thought, well, we're doing it. Everybody must be doing it. You know, surely everybody's doing it. And what I realised, I suppose, as we were coming out of those bubbles, is that everybody wasn't actually doing it. We were quite unique in how far ahead we'd gotten. And we were then invited to be kind of key opinion leaders for digital dentures globally. So I've had the opportunity to speak in Vegas, Scandinavia, the UK quite a bit, to talk about how you can start on this digital journey. Because I think it's really important that we share the knowledge, share the pathway to do something digitally, because it's more sustainable, it's nicer for the patient, it's less stressful, and you also have those records forever. If you take a mold of somebody's mouth, that mold is going in the bin. If you take a digital scan of somebody's mouth, you can track any changes. So if somebody comes back in 6 months' time and something has changed in the bone or there is a lesion, you can look at those scans and do a comparison. And it's really, I suppose, long term for the patient, it's much healthier. And then the waste, you know, if we made a denture in a traditional way, you know, if you think of all of the stages in the clinic, all of the stages in the lab, you know, the waste is probably the size of maybe a basketball.
Okay.
Now our waste is about the size of a golf ball.
Okay.
For denture. It's huge, huge difference.
And has that move to digitalization also helped accelerate the growth into the UK in terms of the manufacturing into the UK? Because it's literally now you're not sending stuff in a box across impressions in a box over and
for
back
sure.
over and back.
Well, I mean, it's such a good point, because actually it's not just for us in the UK manufacturing, but we've opened 3 new clinics since we did the digital transformation. Okay. So we're now based, our head office is Tara in Europe, but we've opened up in Wexford, Waterford and Swords since, because you're right, we can take a scan of somebody's mouth and it's sent within 30
presumably
seconds.
Somebody in Paris could do the same, or somebody in Vegas could do the same.
So we have, you're right, our manufacturing now has been opened and we're taking scans from pretty much all around the world. You know, UK is quite popular for us. We've got a lot of dentists who send us digital cases. And because we know how to do the digital dentures workflow from a clinical perspective, because our lab team are so heavily involved, they're actually helping support all of those dentists as they're starting and embarking on their digital dentures journey in their own clinics, you know. So we offer the support.
It's almost a flywheel to build a business.
We're like partners to all those practices that want to do digital dentures.
Because I always like to ask this question. What do you think is the difference between starting and scaling a business? Because you've scaled the business, your parents started it. So when you think of those two different journeys, because presumably you were sitting around the dinner table and when your mom and dad set up the business and heard all of the thing that went on as starting a business. So what's the difference between scaling and starting?
Well, I think Aidan, I was in a very, very lucky position, because I think when you're starting a business, there are so many different issues that you come across. Like going from 1 to 10 employees is really tricky. But going from, you know, 10 to 20 is not so tricky because you've set up all your processes. However, going back, like dental tech, when my parents set it up, they wouldn't have had contracts for people. Well, they did. My mum had a 2-page contract, you know, for employees. Not as detailed as what we would have now. You know, there weren't policies around annual leave, maternity benefit, like all of those things that you would want in place for a business. And when I joined, it was still a really small company. I didn't have the problem of finding new customers, but I've equally experienced losing customers and having to gain new customers, you know, certainly through the manufacturing. But I always say to people when they're founders, I have been in a really lucky position because I didn't go through that really stressful period of starting up, trying to break through. Exactly, exactly. To show, you know, I am good in this space. I have, there should be room for me or my product or my business in this space, and trying to prove it, you know, whereas I walked into something that was already a proven model. However, I mean, now I still feel like we're like a startup all over again. You know, I mean, definitely doing the digital transformation was like, yeah, and proof of concept. Proof of concept with my own team, you know, going, you're mad, you're crazy, you can't do this, you know. But I definitely feel that there's been elements of that throughout. And I think with any business, you know, there's a difficult path, a difficult journey. You've got to gain customers. You've got to keep that traction going. You know, there's always going to be a customer loss here or there. How do you replace it? How do you keep that going on an ongoing basis? How do you bring your team on board? How do you manage your team from 1 to 10? How do you manage your team through a digital transformation? Amazing. If people are saying, "I, you know, this is how I
put me out of my job."
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that was the biggest worry with our technicians. Funny enough, you say that, the biggest thing was they were like, if I don't do this,
this is like, I'm going to be out of a job.
But
Christmas.
If I do, yeah, if I do do it, I'm going to be out of a job, you know. And I'd say, look, you know, we all know about AI and, the, you know, the advantages and disadvantages of AI and how that's going to affect people's jobs as well. But it was the same question for us and our team was, how is this digital transformation going to, where am I going to be needed? You know, and we were really clear with our team. They helped us, you know, shape out where they would be needed. And what actually happened in the end was they realized that they were going to be needed at the best possible parts. They no longer have to work on the plaster bench. No technician sets off on a, you know, dental technology journey going, I want my job to be on the plaster bench for the rest of my life. You know, it is the, what we always classed as the basic start off work. You're always started on the plaster bench. And they no longer need to do that because everything's digital. So if we needed a model, it's 3D printed. If we needed a tray, it's 3D printed. If we need the trial version of somebody's denture, it's 3D printed. You know, and the final bit. So they get to do the lovely bits where they're designing what it's going to look like in the patient's mouth. You know, they're working off the images of the patient, the scans of the patient. We do digital face scan as well as a scan of the inside.
They probably never realised how much boring stuff was in the job. And that no longer is in the job.
And they get to do the nice stuff, add the character, you know, all the pretty fancy stuff that you want to do, but you have to do the other stuff in order to get there, you know. But yeah, we've taken a lot of that away, which is great, you know.
What's the culture in dental tech?
I think we have a really, really good culture. We have one of the longest retention in the industry. You know, typically dental nurses tend to stay in companies maybe 1.5 to 2 years. Our average is well over 5 years, which I'm really proud of. Our technicians are with us a long, long time. Our longest technician just retired actually 2 years ago. We did our first retirement after 28 years in the business. And our second longest technician with us is with us 19 years. You know, that's not to say we haven't had people come and go. We are, you know, I say to people, we're not a utopia. We're not walking on clouds. We're also really respectful of people. Our family and that kind of familial feel of the business is always there. You know, your home life, your personal life, the stresses that you feel outside of work, they're not a coat that you drop at the door when you come into dental tech. We're very much aware that people are going through things, and if they need some space for that, you know, and they share it with us, it will be heard, you know, and we'll go through it with them. We'll support them. We'll help them. We've had people getting married. We've had people having babies. We've had people losing babies, you know, buying a house, losing out on the mortgage, you know, all of those different things, you know, losses and wins all the way throughout. And I would say our team, if they were sitting here, would say that we're very inclusive of everybody.
And how do you think it's changed under your leadership?
You can't
say it's better, right?
It's way better, way better. I suppose we have a much bigger team, right? So when I started, there was only six on the team, you know, so we're nearly 40 now. We definitely hire on talent. That's our hire on talent. I mean, we've only 40 on the team, but we've over 15 different nationalities from around the world on the team. So for a small Irish company, local Irish company, that's a huge thing. And with all of those different cultural backgrounds, we still have maintained that lovely culture of people wanting to come to work, enjoying coming to work because the people they work with are really friendly, accepting and inclusive. And, you know, our team, it's strange now because our team really do the hiring. Like I might hire somebody in, but the team will be the first ones to say they're not part of they're not fit. They'll help support them for a period of time. And then they'll be kind of going, it's not working out. you know, so they kind of make my job a little bit easier in that sense. Yeah. But when somebody comes in and they're the right fit, you know, straight away, you know, it's
just hand in glove type
thing. Yeah, it's brilliant. So they kind of, they set the culture themselves, really, you know, and they maintain it.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about or really come close to going off in a completely different direction? Or do you see the path in front of you so challenging? You go, why the hell else? Why would I leave here when there's so much to be done and I'm enjoying it?
Oh, well, I think it's only human to feel like some days I don't want to go to work or I'd like to do something different, you know, and I think that's normal. I think every CEO, if they sat here and said that they never thought of working for somebody else, then they're definitely not sharing everything. There are the odd days where you'd go, would it be easier if I just worked for somebody else and did something completely different? I suppose, you know, back to that whole, I still think Dental Tech Group is such a, in such a startup mindset after doing that digital transformation, opening three new clinics. We're hoping to open our fifth next year. You know, we're just in the process of kind of mapping that out. And, you know, sixth, hopefully in 2020, the end of 27, you know, so that's the plan. And really growing around Ireland. So I feel like that's a really exciting period. So I don't feel like that I need to go off on a tangent right now. However, there are some other things I definitely want to do, you know, and I suppose for fun, I work with a lot of other entrepreneurs. I'm the current president of the All-Ireland Business Foundation. So I get to do a lot of work with other companies and I get to talk on stage, which I love. I do love the chats and I love presenting and being part of that. So I get an opportunity to do that. I'm president for the rest of this year as well, 2026. I love that. I do mentoring. I do coaching. I'm working with a couple of programs. I've helped out with the All Ireland program, helping entrepreneurs from north and south. I'm part of Network Dublin. I love that. And just being part of those groups and giving back. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a passion bit on the side. So because I have that, I feel quite
that
content right now.
The itch
it
for
does.
A while.
It definitely does. And look, Dental Tech gives me a huge opportunity to travel as well because I'm part of Going for Growth. I'm part of EY Winning Women. You know, I'm part of Vital Voices, which is a not-for-profit American group that helps women and young girls through education and sustainable businesses to grow and further educate. And I get to work with other female entrepreneurs and share my knowledge and travel the world doing it. You know, so I'm part of the EY Winning Women group, as I said, and I'm just back from one of the most amazing conferences in Palm Springs. There's only 800 people globally invited and little old me from Dublin was one of them. You know, so because of the, I suppose, the participation and the give back, you know, I get to do some amazing things. So yeah, it definitely scratches the itch.
On the topic of entrepreneurs, right? And I ask entrepreneurs this, so you'll have a slightly different viewpoint on it, right? But do you think entrepreneurship is an art, a science, or a philosophy?
Ooh, an art, a science, or a philosophy? I think it's a philosophy for sure. I think it's a way of thinking. You know, I definitely didn't think myself a business leader or entrepreneur for a long, long time. And I think it was surrounding myself with other people when I went, oh yeah, okay, well, maybe that title fits me or maybe I fit that shoe. I think it's a way of thinking. And I think that if you are, you know, they say the sum, you're the sum of the five people you surround yourself with. And that's not always possible if you want to be an entrepreneur, or, you know,
very lonely journey.
It is a very lonely journey. But if you can find your tribe and find your network, it really isn't a lonely journey because you realize everybody's going through the same thing as you and the same issues. But I do think it's a way of thinking. And I think if you feel like that's the way you are, you will deliver. If you want to be like that, you can achieve it. I think anything's possible.
And do you think it's gender dependent?
Oh, okay. So, we're going to get into really tricky water here. No, I'm in this. Do I think it's gender? I think traditionally entrepreneurs would have been men.
Yeah.
And I think people like Paula Fitzsimons and Going for Growth have really helped that to be females as well, feeling like they're entrepreneurs and not just mom and pop little local businesses, that, you know, global entrepreneurs. I think Natasha from EY Winning Women EMEA, she would be doing the same for female entrepreneurs around the EMEA area and bringing Ireland into that. You know, we started off a small little group. We're a much bigger cohort now. I think that anybody could be an entrepreneur. I think my, you know, 15, 16 year olds could be entrepreneurs. My 21 year old, you know, I have three, had three kids the whole way through that journey, by the way, as well. But I think our children can be entrepreneurs. It's all about mindset. I really believe that. Anybody can do anything.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I actually think what separates entrepreneurs from everybody else is their mindset. They're actually crazy.
Absolutely.
They're mentally disturbed. I actually think, because like I look at it, I know I could never be an entrepreneur. Right? And yet I do. I know business is left, right and center. And yeah. I know that I couldn't do. But I know there's a commonality between every entrepreneur I've met on this show. And
you do anything you put your mind to. Yeah.
They're just a little bit out there. Out there is probably the nice way to say it.
Sitting on the edge a little bit. I think we're problem solvers at nature, because people always say, what do you do? And I'm kind of going, well, actually, if you look at the common thread across everybody, we find something that we can solve a problem with, you know.
And just make a business.
Exactly. Yeah, and some people fall into, I mean, I definitely fell into working in dental tech, but I absolutely love it. I think for a long time I wondered, will I ever understand or know what I want to be or when I grow up? And I remember in my 30s going, I think I really feel like this is what I want to be when I grow up.
It's a good way to be.
Yeah.
Has fear of failure ever been a driving force?
I think there's always fear, a bit of fear of failure, right? But I also think that that has been a catalyst for our growth, because I'm so determined and I like to prove people wrong. You know, I definitely think there was an element of the, you know, well, I felt I am a female in a male dominated business when I first joined dental tech. And also, I'm not a dentist. I'm not a technician. Sure, what would I know about growing a business? And my background was in business. I did my degree in social science. You know, so I had that small finance or bookkeeping, not even finance, bookkeeping element. So I suppose wondering if I was going to fail, there'd always be a little bit of a what if it doesn't work. But I do think that if there's any problem in front of you or any barrier, you can either push through it, find a way around it, or find a way over it. And that has always been my motto when it comes to anything. I think that that's part of the mindset of being, you know, a business leader or entrepreneur, is that there'll always be tricky things. It's how you go into it. And I go into things with the mindset of we can work around anything. Sure, listen, if we can scan a patient's mouth now, when everybody told me you couldn't, you know, you could only take impressions, I would never have done what I did, you know, but the belief in that anything is possible.
Is it added pressure, though, the fact that you're kind of in the back of your mind say, well, if I screw this up, I've ruined my mum and dad's business, right?
Oh, yeah, no, without a doubt,
guilt in there as
well. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, without a doubt. And also that people will be watching, you know. And somebody said to me, an Irish phrase there, and I really liked it. I thought, God, it's, you know, Irish people, when you're down, they'll help you up, you know. But sometimes when you're up, they'll help you down. You know, so, I mean, that worry of I really need to prove myself because I don't want to let my parents down. I've told them I'll take over. I've told them I'll deliver on this, you know, and all those things. But I suppose I delivered on a lot of that stuff so quickly that, you know, there was always the feeling from them that I had the support. You know, it was more external of that. I don't want to lose face.
Yeah, true enough. There's an idea out there, though, you know, as you get bigger, the level of innovation can fall in a business, right? And you've been so innovative if we talk about the digital thing. How do you keep the foot on that accelerator in terms of innovation and not sit back and go, geez, we were great. We were the first ones to do this. Aren't we brilliant, right?
And then
somebody else overtakes you.
Yeah. No, it's great. I suppose we have that kind of change mindset ingrained in the team. So we're always looking for, you know, that kind of constant and never ending improvement. But the digital transformation for sure was huge. I think with any change and any growth in business, I think there is, you know, I used to call it kind of like a curve up and then plateau, you know, reconvene almost, pull everything together, make sure you're doing it right before you go for the next
attack,
rise
consolidate,
up.
Attack, consolidate.
There you go. And then somebody introduced me to the S curve not so long ago, you know, and I really do believe in that. There's that element of the transform, digitize, whatever you need to do, or change, innovate, and then make sure you're doing that right before you start trying to look for the next thing. You know, we introduced lots of new products, which was great. So once we were scanning them out, it opened up a huge opportunity. You know, now we're looking at how we can support our clients and customers through AI. I suppose every other company is doing the same. You know, so but for us, I suppose it's making sure we're doing it right. You know, so do that innovation piece. But it'll never go. I mean, I don't know what's next, but it'll never go.
There.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you obsess about the small things?
Ooh, do I obsess about small things? I do sometimes. Yeah, I do. Yeah. If something's not going right, I'll help the team and we'll work together about getting what that small thing, because sometimes because we're dealing with the mouth, it can be a small thing that could be setting the whole process wrong. Mm. And we definitely hit bottlenecks like that through the digital transformation. However, I have a really good team. Mm. So I have an amazing team of front of house managers. They look after the clinics. I don't have to worry about anything that they do. I can take time off to go to conferences, which I have done. I did two in a row actually, and then took a couple of days off myself, you know, and I have nice holidays where I don't have to worry about things. So I would say if there was something going wrong and the team said, this is going wrong, we can't figure out what it is, I would obsess about the small things, okay. Yeah, for sure. In terms of people doing their job, if people are doing their job well, my conversation with them is, I'm here to support
Hello,
you.
Goodbye.
What do you need? What do you need from me? Yeah. You know, and that's it, you know. Now, if they're not performing, I mean, that's different. You know, the team will be feeding it back and we'll be having different chats. But yeah, try not to sweat the small
things. On the topic then of employees, is it hire talent or develop from within?
Okay, so it's definitely a bit of both, because you don't want to hire somebody with no talent in dentistry and ask them to do a filling. Yes. You've got to have somebody.
I won't be going to that dentist. Thanks very much.
You definitely have to make sure that there is, you know, the skills
there.
And qualification yeah. there for sure. You know, and then I suppose, yeah, we would look at hiring the right people that connect in with our culture, but they do have to be skilled to a certain amount. Mm. But we absolutely train on the job, because there is no dentist that I have come across yet that has the skill and ability to deliver dentures the way we want dentures delivered, and certainly not digitally.
Mm.
You know, so a lot of dentists will tell you that they'll go to college for 5 years. They might do two or three dentures during their practical training. You know, when they come to us, they get a really intense onboarding and they get the digital transformation side of it. You know, we've an LMS. Everybody has all the videos. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the videos are some of the original videos we did on here's how to scan a mouth.
Listen, doesn't mean they're wrong.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You also have a qualification as an employee engagement coach. So I'm going to be very interested in the answer to this, right? When it comes to staff, okay? They're the best and let them what they do. If they're the best, do you let them do what they do? But if there's collateral damage as a result of that. So the ultimate question is, what happens when you hire a talented asshole? That's the question.
We've never done that. No.
I'm asking you to wear a wider hat.
what happens when you hire a talented asshole? It's a very, very good question. So somebody a long time ago said to me that they used an ABCD metric when it came to employees. So, you know, you've got your A superstar. They know what they're doing. You can let them off loose. They can do what they want. But you have them reporting back to you and saying, here's what I'm doing, and accountability. And your reply to that is, how can I help you and support you? What do you need from me? You know, and then you've got somebody B, you know, the B players. Mm. They know how to do the job, some of, but they really need a bit more support. But they've got the right attitude towards it. And, you know, they just need a bit more support. So you're checking in with them going, here, how do I support you? But here, what about this? And you could try this. And then you have your C's, you know, that you want to bring up to your B's. And then you have your D's who you just want to get rid of. Mm. I think in terms of hiring, you know, talented people that are not good, hire slow, fire fast. Mm. I mean, they are gone so quick that you could see the dust behind them. And they don't last with us. And that's really down to the team, because the team really identify straight away who works well with our culture, who's good at doing their job. Are they, like, they have to be really great with the patients, but they have to be really amazing with our team.
Yeah.
You know, our team, I know people say customer comes first. Actually, in dental tech, our team come first, because if our team don't feel great on the day, there's such a patient focus and interaction. If they're not having a good day, the patient's definitely not going to have a good day. You know, so, I mean, we have had mishires in the past. Mm. That's for
so
sure.
That's
everybody
nature,
has, you know.
Of it, you know.
But yeah.
What do you think is the hardest part of the job as a CEO?
Well, you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. I definitely think it's that feeling of being lonely, you know, that loneliness. I can honestly say I don't feel that now, because I have an amazing group of friends who are entrepreneurs and, you know, have gone through all the same things and are going through the same things, and we really support each other. But I definitely think it can be really lonely. I felt really lonely up until, I suppose, 2013, because a little bit, I wanted to prove to my parents I could do it. I didn't want to let them down. But I equally, around 2013, I really felt I had brought the business as far as I could bring it. And that's when I got introduced to Going for Growth. And as I said, you know, it was like somebody turned the lights on, you know, and I, oh, wow, I could do this and I could do that and I could do this. I'm not actually, I haven't fully expired all of my talent here. Mm-hmm. You know, I can find new things to do. And that really helped and opened my eyes. But yeah, I think that loneliness of the, am I doing it right? What if I do it wrong? You know, the worrying about failure, I suppose, all of those things going through your head and ruminating in your own head, you know, on your own and going through your own head. Sure, that's a barrier in itself. If you can't talk to somebody and get honest feedback, no skin in the game feedback, it is a very lonely place to be. And you can spend a lot of time in that position and not actually grow your business as a result because you're not talking to somebody about it.
So what? So then that says, what personal characteristics do you think are most important as a CEO?
I think there's a few things, I suppose multiple. I'd say leading from the rear is probably one of the best things. Allow people to do what they're good at and be there to support them if you need. But you also have to be future thinking. You have to be thinking, how do I sustain the jobs here? How do I future-proof the business? How do I grow it? You're right. If you do something and you're really innovative at the start and you don't innovate as you go, other companies just pass you by. You know, so it's how do you stay relevant? How do you stay in a position where you're going to grow, you're going to scale, and you're going to keep jobs? You're going to create jobs. Like, we've created new jobs that were never existed in dental before. Like, we have a printer manager, you know, we have scan clinicians, we have people who just are trained in scanning, you know. So it's how do you innovate within your company as well to make sure that you are going to be in business for a long time, you know. So
you mentioned earlier on in terms of the hardest part of the CEO, having people to seek advice from. So who do you seek advice from?
I have a really good group of friends that are also CEOs. I mean, straight away, Val Quinn is one of my friends. She's ex-GM of Coca-Cola. Kira Crossan, based in Cork, wedding dates. And Veronica, my friend in Portugal, who owns a gaming company. I mean, also very, very different, but we are really good, you know, female supporters, you know, if I need anything. You know, I have a mentor from Ukraine, Nadia, she's in the States now. I pick up the phone anytime to her. Nora Casey is a good friend, text her, no problem. I mean, she actually really helped me with my business plan when we were doing it during COVID. But I suppose probably because I've put myself out there, I made a decision in 2018 that if somebody invited me to something or asked me to do something, I'd say yes. A bit like that Yes movie, but not on that same level, I suppose, just around the business side.
Somebody put it a great way to me at one time, exactly that point. You have to give forward and give
absolutely,
back.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't be take, take, take. There has to be a give. But I think sometimes by giving, you end up getting so much more. And that's what's happened, I suppose, through those networks or those tribes and meeting up, and you'd be chatting to somebody about the issue they're going through and just talking it through, and then you feel comfortable talking about any issue that you've come through. It's having a really great supportive friend group. They're my friends now, as opposed to just my entrepreneur group. You know, we socialise as well as talk about
most
business.
Most importantly. Do you hate losing or love winning?
Oh, I'm so competitive. Oh, I'm so competitive with anything. Yeah, yeah. I don't mind losing, but I'm really competitive. I love a good game.
You love winning.
Yeah.
I
love a good game, actually. Right. Love a good game. Like, we were away at the weekend and we were playing card games and everything like that. And I love participating. I am highly competitive, but I love the participation part of it. And I'm not a sore loser. Yeah. I'm an absolutely hands on heart, like, give it away to whoever gets it. But I am competitive while I'm in it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And then when it comes to decision making, are you fast or slow?
Absolutely fast. Rapid. Yeah. Make a decision quick. Yeah.
And then
no regrets on it.
And
no
then
regrets.
The decisions, are they data-based or gut-based?
Oh, both. Yeah. I like to have some numbers. So if somebody comes to me and it's wishy-washy and So if somebody comes to me with a really strong idea and they can back it up with the data and I trust them, I'll make a decision rapid, so quickly. I'd be like, yeah, go for it. Yeah, I trust you, do it, whatever. And if it doesn't work, it's fine. You know, we haven't lost too much on it, but do it quick, fail fast. But if somebody comes to me with a wishy-washy idea and I'm kind of going, well, how do you think that's going to work? And they can't tell me how it's going to work. Now, okay, that's terrible if they can't articulate it, but it might actually be because they don't have the data backed. But yeah, you have to have the data backed, otherwise you'll...
Just making all sorts of decisions. How do you feel about what you've already done in the company?
Oh, I feel really proud of what we've done.
Yeah.
I feel really, really proud of what we've done. I'm really proud of the team, really proud of what my mum and dad set up and having the opportunity to take over that. Really proud of, you know, having them exit and still talk to them and still be friends. And really proud of the team that's there. Yeah, I think what we've done is phenomenal. I mean, it's, yeah, not everybody has done it. And maybe that was through, you know, naive ignorance because I didn't know what was going on in the industry. Irrespective of how it happened, it still happened. And really super excited about the future. I mean, I just see such a huge opportunity for DentalTech going forward.
And do you think you celebrate your wins often enough?
Absolutely, we do. Yeah. We have a WhatsApp group just for talking about wins, positive stories, good reviews, testimonials.
You'd be amazed how many people don't celebrate their wins.
Oh, yeah. When our team is, we have technical WhatsApp groups for if you have a query on something or you need training on something. So like our front of house have a full, they've got their own chat. The dentists, clinicians have their own chat. The overall lab has their own chat. But we've one WhatsApp group called the Dream Team, and that's for sharing all our wins. Because we've four locations and we have also a team that work remotely. I mean, I said about creating jobs. You know, we have a full-time guy who's in South America doing design for us all day long, and he sends things directly to the printer. So you come in the morning, that's up. But like, how do you stay connected with people if they're all over the place? Or even in just Ireland alone, the four locations. Well, we have a WhatsApp group for celebrating all our wins and sharing cases where, you know, we've had people coming in where they're like, there's nothing you can do for me. I don't think you can do anything, but I'm at my last, you know, last chance to try. And, you know, if you can help me. And they're crying in the chair by the end of it because they can't believe their smile that they've got.
How do you deal with setbacks?
Very quickly. Park it, get over it, get on with it. There's no point in you dwelling on stuff. You know, now if it's a setback that is human based and that person keeps making those setbacks,
that's a different thing. Yeah,
but you can't dwell on it. You have to get over it. You know, there's always going to be things that don't work out and do set you back. But if you can't just move forward, you're going to be stuck in that. And you will be surpassed. Mm-hmm. You won't be innovating. You won't be moving forward. You'll just be stuck in that tranche. And I think it's about mindset. You know, I definitely think I have a very positive mindset just in general around things, you know, but that's, and it's a bit infectious as well. So try and...
Then in that regard, then what mistake do you think you learned most from?
There's definitely a few. It's not just one. What mistake? Oh, I think, well, one of the big things would have been underestimating the amount of time it took or would take to do the change during COVID. You know, when I set out at the start, I thought it was going to take a certain amount of time and it took a lot more than that, you know. And when I knew there was going to be bottlenecks, I didn't anticipate the amount of bottlenecks we would have. So, you know, we had budgeted out what we thought it would be. It ended up being double that.
Right.
So definitely learned a lot from that. So that put it, you know, that was tied on cash flow. I wouldn't want to be doing that again, you know. So, you know, what is it? Profit is vanity. Turnover is vanity. Profit is sanity and cash flow is king.
Yeah.
You know, managing your cash flow really, really tightly is something that we would now have learned from that, because we had to invest. We had more bottlenecks. We had to fix the bottlenecks in order to be able to push through. We definitely hadn't budgeted that out properly.
What advice would you give to young people? Career, life, anything you like.
Oh, I would say, you know, life is meandering. It's not a straight line. And, you know, just whatever feels right, go for it. And if you're not sure, you could just go for it anyway. I think when I was in college, even though I look so young, I mean, it was a good while ago, you know, you went into college to do one thing and that's what your career was for life, you know. And that's for, I think for a long time, I thought, well, that's not what I did. You know, I went into something completely different. Surely that's not right, or there's something I'm not doing it right. And I did question that a bit, not for long, but I definitely did question it. And I would say, you know, everything is for a reason. You know,
everything
things happen. Yeah. You know, and it's how you approach what happens will be the making of you. You know, if you think everything is doom and gloom, everything will be doom and gloom, you know.
Right. The black book comes out.
I'm a little bit nervous about this.
No, I'm as nervous as I am. All right.
Have I answered it already?
No.
Oh, okay.
Luckily enough. And you may not want to answer it. Right. Your question is, quite simply, what's your exit strategy?
Ooh. I'm definitely not talking about that. No, no.
Hypothetically.
So it's a good question, because I suppose my main focus over the last, I suppose, you know, 5 to 10 years, given how long it took to you know, talk through that process with my mom and dad. Mm. Obviously, we didn't talk about it every day. We weren't very strategic in it. It was like when the conversation came up, we were more strategic in the last kind of 12 months when we decided we were definitely doing it and what was going to happen. So I think I spent so much time on that, that I haven't really dwelled on any kind of exit. I'm definitely in a growth phase right now. I think in the next 18 to 24 months, we would be interested in investment. I don't know if I want to exit because I'd like to be part of a growth journey. So I don't necessarily have an exit strategy just yet. So yeah.
In the works. It's in the 3D printer as we speak.
Possibly.
I've been sent to the 3D
printer. Possibly.
Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Bevan Mahon. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks and we'll see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.